tonight, we're talking about sexual harassment at work and how you should handle it if it's happening to you. My guests are Scott Oswald of the Employment Law Group and Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. David, calling from D.C. What's on your mind, David?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to get a comment on the ability for employers to utilize the at-will employment law, which allows you to terminate for no reason at all, where they can circumvent the complaint and simply say that they're just terminating them because they really for no reason at all. Can you comment on that and how that plays into this ability to protect yourself for any kind of discrimination or sexual harassment?
Yeah, so David, you know, you raise a really good point, because employers tout the at-will language in their manuals and their contracts. They talk about it all the time. They put it in their offer letters, and they say, look, we can really do whatever we want because you are at will. What it ignores is the fact that for instance, in the district, we have laws that prohibit certain kinds of conduct in the workplace, and these trump, pardon the they trump the at-will language that is there. So what at-will simply means is that while an employer is free to terminate an individual for at its own discretion, it may not violate the law in doing so. And the most important law here is the law that prohibits an employer from retaliating against an employee who discloses sexual harassment or any other kind of innate characteristic harassment, race harassment, disability harassment, age harassment, religious harassment. To the extent that an employee says, look, I think that I'm being treated unfairly because of my race or religion, my disability, my age, they're going to be protected, notwithstanding any kind of at-will language that an employer might have in its manual.
Okay. Thank you so much for your phone call, David. Terry, talk to me a little bit about why people do not complain, that they do not file. Because I would imagine, particularly in smaller companies, smaller organizations, there's an issue about retaliation. There's an issue about being perhaps blackballed, not being part of the team.
Absolutely. There's all of that. And then depending on the type of sexual harassment that a person is experiencing, for example, what Roger Ailes is said to have done.
The former president and CEO of Fox News, who, for those of you who may not be familiar, is stepping down after he was accused of being of sexually harassing former Fox News reporter Gretchen Carlson. But please go right ahead.
And the company, Fox News, did the right thing. They put an independent investigator on it, and within a very short period of time, more than 20 other women came forward with horror stories of what they had experienced from Roger Ailes. The things that he is alleged to have done paint a picture of a predatory, calculating guy who really was looking for sexual favors.
But hold on, because some of the women said that he helped them, and that's what Donald Trump said. So what's going on with that?
Wait. Mm-hmm. When a woman advances in a male-dominated field, I'm sorry, that's her. Mm-hmm. That's her talent. That's her achievement. Yes, her boss may have, you know, not fired her on the spot when she refuses his advancements, but that doesn't mean that he's the one who advanced her. Mm-hmm. She got there on her own, and I can guarantee you that if she's I'm going to go back to this, if she's a woman of color, she so got there on her own. Because what you see with sexual harassment is that it's coupled with racial harassment, two different types of harassment, sort of that women of color face in a very different way from the way white women face it. So I really want to, you know, be clear about that. I think one of the reasons that women don't come forward, again, is because they feel isolated. And these predatory guys really know how to make a person feel isolated and unsure of themselves and therefore kind of not willing to come forward, not knowing who they can confide in, not knowing if they can go to HR, not knowing if they're in a space where if they did get retaliated against, what would they do, and so forth. I mean, so that's part of it. But here, if I could tell you an anecdote.
Go right ahead, briefly, if you can.
Many, many women start off their working lives by waiting tables while they're in high school and college. And according to the Restaurant Opportunity Center, Rock United, sexual harassment is a significantly higher problem in the restaurant industry than in other industries. And in fact, the head of Rock United commented to me once. She said, you know, many women have told me that they have experienced sexual harassment in their careers, but it was never as bad as what they experienced when they were waiting tables in high school and college.
Why is that?
Because servers in high school and servers all over the country, the minimum wage for tipped workers is $2.13 an hour. So the customer pays the vast majority of your wages, and you don't dare say no to a customer. It is a horrible position to be in, and it's so much better in so many other workplaces that many women don't come forward with sexual harassment because it's not as bad as what they experienced when they were much younger.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tamika, thanks for hanging on. Calling from Sea Pleasant, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I'd like to thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I basically did a sexual harassment case, and it was actually a class action. I was actually laid off because I had received an email that had this house on there, and every opening, like the windows and doors, it was Playboy men coming out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was unwanted to me. I knew the coworker, but we wasn't like that, so to speak, as far as that friendly for her to send me such an email. Took it to the HR. 2 months later, to make a long story short, I was laid off. The manager, because of the handbook saying that I can go to any manager and make my complaint, in which I did, the manager suggested that I go to HR, in which I did. He was demoted, and I was laid off.
Wow. Mm.
So after that, I started researching with EEO. I didn't go to the commission level. I went directly to Baltimore to the EEO office, and we did a case. And it took us about 3 years, but we finally won the case. Hmm. We found out that they had actually demoted me and this whole group of people because of the sexual harassment complaint that I made. And they, they laid me off, I'm sorry, and demoted him. And actually put the person that sent me the email in his place as management.
Well, Tamika, you're saying you, but in the end, you did win that case?
Yes, I won it all. I mean, I did all the research, copied all the paperwork. I mean, they were fabricating paperwork. They were taking paperwork out of his files, out of my files. They were doing a whole lot of stuff. But luckily, I was able to copy everything before they started changing.
Well, Tamika, thank you for sharing that with me, and certainly good for you and those who were involved, which brings me to this point, Scott. If you're in the midst of it, if it's happening on the job, it seems to me one of the biggest hills to climb would be having proof that this is actually happening. So how do you, as Tamika did, dare I say, build a case when you're talking about harassment that is severe and vicious?
Yeah, and I think that Tamika's story is, she was heroic in pursuing it. And it seems to suggest that the only reason she won was that she was able to finally get documents that supported what she knew to be the fact from the very beginning. So what do you do at the time? The key is the document. And when you are communicating with human resources to confirm it, you know, Miss Human Resource Manager, I want to thank you for seeing me today. I am so grateful for the time you spent with me, for the care that you took. And I just, you know, I was a little nervous during our time together. And I'm not sure that I was able to really say everything that I wanted to. So I thought I would write you this email. Which just confirms some of the things we talked about, and maybe some of the things we didn't talk about so that you have everything that you need to do your job here. That kind of email, that kind of memorialization can make all the difference in the world, so that, you know, in Tamika's case, you know, she doesn't have to heroically go 3 years into it to get documents. She's got it at the outset. So the that kind of proactive approach can mean the difference between being able to prove something and not.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gwen, calling from Fort Washington, what's on your mind?
Good evening. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you. Go right ahead.
Some of what David said and Tamika, my experience was I denied a sexual involvement with my supervisor. And rather than him to continue pursuing it, he took the route of harassing me through my work and proceeded to make my work life misery by giving me poor evaluations, by writing me up, by scrutinizing me, all of which, you know, was 180 degrees from what my performance had been. And I did document myself at that time.
So what happened?
What happened was I didn't go to HR, I didn't go to EEOC. I went to an attorney and consulted with an attorney. And actually, he sent a letter, but he gave me guidance and said that I could do it myself.
Okay.
He gave me guidance on what I needed to do, how to do it, and which was to go to his supervisor.
Let me ask you, Gwen, because we've got other folks on the line. How did it end, or has it ended?
Oh, this was a long time ago. So, yes, it did end, and it ended in my favor. All I wanted was for him to stop harassing me through my work.
Mm-hmm. Did that happen? Did you keep the job?
What? I did get to keep the job until I got promoted outside of the agency.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not to have anything to do with my work. I got assigned another supervisor.
Okay. So you did have you did have a successful end to that, and certainly happy to hear that. And Terry, here's the thing. Thank you, Gwen, by the way, for calling.
Thanks.
Terry, should we go get an attorney instead of going to the HR person or to the vice president of or the CEO of?
You know, I have been told by women that that's exactly what they did and that they felt more comfortable with that. In fact, one woman told me, I would much rather go to an attorney and then let the attorneys and the HR people sort it out. That way I can retain better relationships in the workplace. And she was talking not only about her harasser, but relationships with other people who are friends with the harasser. She didn't want to get into a thing with all those people. And she felt like going to an attorney and having sort of the pros sorted out made a lot of sense. But Scott, I don't know if that's a typical way it's handled.
So many times it is. I just wanted to point out, Gwen's story, I think, has an important lesson, and that is this. Being strong usually doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it doesn't work is because, as Terry mentioned before, sexual harassment a lot of times is about power. Mm-hmm. And the person who stands up strong against the sexual harassment, the harasser doesn't stop there and say, oh, well, this is a strong person. I'm not going to harass this employee anymore. They ratchet it up. So just as in Gwen's case, they begin to scrutinize the performance. They find little alleged performance deficiencies. They point these things out where these were never an issue before.
Mm-hmm. Strong not working, but apparently smart does.
So
yeah.
That's exactly
the right thing.
Yeah. So you know, going to an attorney or notifying HR and doing so in writing is really key.
Need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to John from Bowie as well, talking about sexual harassment on the job. How do you handle it if it's happening to you? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about sexual harassment on the job. How should you handle it if it happens to you? I want to go back to the phone lines. They're still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. John calling from Bowie. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for having me. And a few things I want to point out, which both of you guys and the young lady as well mentioned, document. When you document with sexual harassment, always blank copy yourself on your personal email and never open it. So this way you have a tracking mechanism. When they send you things, blank copy yourself again to your personal email away from the workplace. Secondly, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't address it now, it will harm you or somebody else in the future. Just like somebody probably didn't address it before you, and it's ongoing. Most of the time, sexual offenders, they have a pattern, and you're never the only one.
Hmm. Okay. Well, John, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I appreciate your phone call. Here's something I wanted to ask Scott. When you're talking about sexual harassment, sometimes there's really, you know, a fine line, and depending on the culture that you may have at work, one person's sexual harassment may be another person's compliment. While you don't work here, but one of the first things I said to you, having never met you, I said I complimented you on your jacket and your tie, and I still want them, you know, because you look great. Now, you said thank you, but after I walked away, did you feel uncomfortable? Was that sexual harassment? Was that a compliment? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a really good point because, one person's compliment might be sexual harassment in another context, and it's really important. So this is really hard for employers because employers are in a position where, you know, they want to promote a free flow of information. They want to promote a fun environment where people can feel comfortable interacting as human beings in the workplace. We don't want to sterilize the workplace entirely. Who would want to go to work? So this is difficult for employers to navigate. But I think here's the key. So it depends on how the person, the recipient, feels about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if the person who's experiencing this, who's you know, at the receiving end, they believe that it is improper, then it probably is sexual harassment. And so under these circumstances where an employee steps forward, notifies the human resource department, it might be as simple as the human resource department going to the person who made the comment and just saying, look, just be careful, or doing some more training. Training is really, really important because we set some standards, some norms of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And some of the best training that's done out there is, you know, they do role play. And they actually bring people up and they put them in scenarios where, you know, they can kind of test some of this stuff out and they get a sense of where the line is. But it is really hard. It's a very difficult subject, and I think that's why we still are talking about it in 2016, because there aren't any bright lines. It really is depending upon what's said and to whom.
Well, in that case, I really don't like your jacket and tie. But that way I'll be safe. Here's a tricky one for you, Terry, and this really concerns women and a hostile work environment. How do you deal with perhaps a woman who comes to work and she may be provocatively dressed? And we're talking about a work environment. She may be professionally dressed, but maybe her neckline is a little too plungy. That skirt just a little too high. First question, if other women in the office complain about that, is the woman who is dressed in that manner making them uncomfortable? Or if they speak to her about it, are they making her uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying. And I think, honestly, how do I put this? Women are so often, it is so often hostile to criticize a woman being dressed, especially saying, oh, you're dressed too sexy, you know, because that's automatically sexualizing the woman to begin with. As someone who's uncomfortable with a coworker or how she dresses should go to the employee manual and see what the dress code is. If the individual is outside the dress code, go to your supervisor and say, my coworker is outside the dress code and it upsets me. That's one thing. But going to a coworker and saying, you know, your neckline is too low, your skirt is too short, I think that is over-sexualizing an individual who may be dressed perfectly appropriately within the dress code. I get that may be uncomfortable, but frankly, that's where training comes in. I mean, people need to know what the parameters are with appropriate interactions with each other. And, you know, that's it. But I mean, seriously, saying someone is dressed too sexy, that is so victim blaming.
And but then Ivanka Trump, just this week, in trying to defend her father, Donald Trump, said in a previous professional environment that she dressed down in order to prevent any kinds of comments. Should a woman have to dress down to avoid that? I mean, to me, that sounds like you're kind of going in expecting that things are gonna be bad, and that's a statement about the work culture, or at least attitudes about the work culture.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. I mean, to the extent that she felt that way, that's the employer's problem. The employer clearly did not at the outset set very clear expectations about how people should dress. And Terry's absolutely right. It's about a dress code. And you violate it whether you're a man or a woman, just like a man, you might say, no shorts. Doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, you're violating the dress code. We might say, you know, if you're going to wear a skirt, it's got to be this length, perfectly appropriate. Mm-hmm. Men wear skirts sometimes. Could happen. Mm-hmm. The point is that it's neutral. So we have a neutral set of rules that apply to everybody. And
exactly.
So what is being complained about is the fact that the person is violating the dress code, not that they are dressing too sexy or
provocative.
Is there a point at which a person who is being sexually harassed may have to leave the job? I mean, obviously, when in the Donald Trump case, he said that he hoped that his daughter would leave if she was harassed. And certainly we know that she has a family that has enough money where she could leave. But for the regular Joes and the regular Janes out there, is there a point where that becomes an option? And if that is the option, do other things need to take place before that?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good example is Gwen's story earlier about the fact that she felt like she was being retaliated against after she stepped forward. So in a situation, for instance, where there's retaliation, to the extent that that's occurring, the law allows a person to leave, to not have to subject themselves to that, you know, forever. They can leave the workplace, retreat, and still have a legal claim. The employer's going to be in big trouble under those circumstances. So, especially where there's retaliation.
But that's so scary, because if you do leave and you don't have Trump money or that kind of savings, is there also a danger that that you could be blackballed in your profession, as some could argue with Gretchen Carlson, with Fox News? That is a communications organization and people talk. So how do you protect yourself from that?
Yeah, and you can bet that they're not going to give you a good reference when that next employer calls and says, look, I'm going to want to ask you about, you know, your employee. Now, this is tough. This is tough stuff. I mean, there's no question that this is a decision that is tough for any employee. And to the extent that the employee can in fact stick it out with HR to allow the process to continue, to allow HR to investigate, to give the company the ability to do the right thing. Because there are companies that really do.
That do want to.
That want to and follow their policies. It's best. That's why if you know that you're being retaliated against, now you know what the company's position is. They're now taking an action. They've sided with the harasser. But at least during the time of the investigation, when the company is doing its due diligence to stick it out for whatever period of time until you hear back from HR and get their response to your complaint.
Terry, final thought from you. It's been a long time since Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Are things getting better for women specifically on the job, but also just in addressing the harassment issue, or do you think they're worse when you're talking about workplace cultures?
You know, I haven't seen any statistics lately. I know that the reports of sexual harassment dramatically spiked in the early 1990s after Anita Hill made her testimony, because so many women felt so much braver to be able to come forward and saying this is happening and it's not okay. I think that employee manuals have gotten a lot better. I think that there have been some improvements. But here is something that has not improved, or at least not dramatically. The differential in pay, the famous gender wage gap and gender race wage gap, as we call it in now, those two wage gaps keep women off center, if you will, that make it harder for women to be able to, first of all, complain, to feel empowered to complain, and secondly, makes it harder for them to have many options. As you said, if you're not Ivanka Trump, you really can't go 2 weeks without a paycheck. So it's very difficult. It remains really hard. And the issue of blackballing is very, very real.
Well, I want to thank both of you for sharing with us. And we're going to continue to keep an eye on this, because certainly as it relates to this particular issue and this political season, it's not the end. So Scott Oswald and Terry O'Neill, thank you both for coming in.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate
it.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or follow us on Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141.